Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, April 27th, 2018. I'm Mary Sherman. A historic summit between North and South Korea. Also on the Friday rundown, teachers continue their fight for funding, the EPA chief grilled on Capitol Hill, and remembering those who've lost their lives on the job. At the top of the list, the leaders of North and South Korea met today for the first time in more than a decade at the demilitarized zone that divides the two countries. Discussions on the agenda included the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, the improvement of bilateral relations, and a formal peace settlement. Back here in the U.S., the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt, insisted he has nothing to hide and shifted blame for some of the agency's spending decisions to staffers during 6 hours of grilling on Capitol Hill Thursday. Pruitt faced an array of questions about his decisions to roll back environmental policy since taking over the agency, whether he granted controversial raises to two of his aides, and the cost of a security detail and travel. With climate change becoming a larger and larger headline, many wonder what their part of the Midwestern landscape will look like in 20 years. Elizabeth Brown reports scientists are working on some answers.
A new study by the Nature Conservancy aims to answer some of those questions and show what can be done to help areas adapt. Meredith Cornett with the Nature Conservancy says major factors that determine an area's adaptability are the number of local microclimates and the barriers separating them. The more barriers, the less resilience.
If there aren't a lot of major barriers, like a six-lane highway, between where you're standing and the next spot over, then you have a much better chance of being able to move and find new climate niches.
So she says it makes sense that a number of natural areas and state parks are considered highly resilient to climate change. In Minnesota, that includes Teneguch State Park in the North Shore and Itasca State Park at the headwaters of the Mississippi.
Teachers from across Colorado say they'll rally outside the state capitol again today, urging lawmakers to fully fund the state's public schools.
Henry Roman, president of the Denver Classroom Teachers Association, says educators are taking a personal day to stand up for students, schools, and their profession. He notes Colorado has one of the top economies in the nation, but schools are underfunded by $822 million, and the state's investment per pupil is $2,700 below the national average.
We're not giving the schools the resources they truly need for every child to be successful. 50% of the school districts, I believe, are on 4 days per week, and it's impacting the education that our students are receiving.
Colorado's teachers join educators in a number of states, including Arizona, Kentucky, Oklahoma, and West Virginia, who are also demonstrating to demand increased pay and school funding. Critics say the actions are disruptive, leave kids and parents in the lurch, and argue that the moves are a calculated effort to bolster teachers' unions. I'm Eric Galatis.
And on the topic of education, Dreamers will soon be able to receive institutional financial aid to attend Connecticut's public colleges and universities.
On Wednesday night, 13 Republicans joined 78 Democrats in the State House of Representatives to give final passage to the bill that will let undocumented immigrants who arrived as children to apply for the assistance. The bill doesn't include access to federal Pell Grants or state taxpayer-funded scholarships, but Carolina Bortoletto, co-founder of the group Connecticut Students for a Dream, calls the bill an important advance for Dreamers' access to higher education.
It won't cover the whole amount of tuition, but it will have a very big impact for students who previously were not eligible for any kind of aid. So any small amount that they get will help them.
Governor Daniel Malloy has said he will sign the bill into law. Opponents have said allowing undocumented students to apply for the limited amount of aid could mean some citizens will be denied. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
Federal investigators are on the scene of a refinery fire and explosion in Superior, Wisconsin. The town of about 27,000 people was evacuated as a precaution as plumes of black smoke drifted from the Husky Energy plant. At least 11 people are injured. Laborers across the country will remember people who died on the job on Workers' Memorial Day this Saturday. We get more on the story from Eric Tagadoff.
In Washington State, the farm community is remembering Ernesto Silva Ibarra, a 28-year-old farm worker who became ill last year while picking berries during wildfires and later died. The Washington State Department of Labor and Industries fined Sarban on Farms, where Ibarra worked, for two infractions over the incident, not providing timely meals and rest breaks to workers. However, Edgar Franks with the group Community to Community Development thinks the investigation should be reopened for Ibarra and other farm workers.
There in a precarious position and put in a position where they can't defend themselves. And if they do defend themselves, they get threatened. We want justice for Ernesto and the hundreds of other farm workers that were sick.
He says other workers also became ill during wildfires last year. Sarbanon was scheduled to dispute the fines in court this week, but the case was delayed until May 23rd. LNI fined the company nearly $150,000, but the agency did not find Sarbanon responsible for Ibarra's death.
In health news, new government data suggests the prevalence of autism spectrum disorder among American children continues to rise, which some experts say may be a good thing. An estimated 1 in 59 kids in the U.S. has an ASD diagnosis, up from 1 in 68 in 2012. According to the CDC, the higher number is probably a sign that more children of color who are on the autism spectrum are being recognized as such and getting services to help them. Thanks for newsin' and cruisin' with us. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.